Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and each week we bring you exciting new guests to talk about various aspects of UFOs and the paranormal. And like I always say, there is so much to talk about in these fields, and just so much going on. Very, very exciting time to be involved in UFO research and paranormal research. I hope you enjoyed our show last week when our guest was Christy Kisara Dennett. She's actually my sister-in-law, and she talked about many of her amazing experiences with ghosts and aliens and psychic powers and things like that, and her experience as being one of the leading illustrators of UFO encounters. So if you didn't get a chance to listen to that show, again, it is on archives on the BBS website. Tonight, oh, I am so excited. I am so happy to be bringing the guest I have tonight to you guys to listen to because, wow, she is very accomplished. She's actually one of my favorite people involved in UFO research and, for that matter, one of my favorite people on the planet and perhaps off of it. But her name is Barbara Lamb, and she has been a UFO researcher for many, many years, I believe since at least 1991. Yes. And she has written a fascinating new book called Alien Experiences, 25 Cases of Close Encounters Never Before Revealed, which she has co-written, actually, with Nadine Lalic. I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
Nadine Lalic.
And there's a foreword also in the book by R. Leo Sprinkle, another pioneering researcher in this field. And it's a beautiful and amazing book. I have finished it and I'm reading it again. I absolutely adore it. It's one of those rare gems that are just very hard to find. And before we get to my guest, let me tell you a little bit about her. She is a licensed marriage and family therapist, a certified hypnotherapist, and a regression therapist. She has a master's degree in behavioral science and is currently specializing in regression therapy with people who have experienced encounters with extraterrestrial beings. For several years during the 1980s, she was trained in regression therapy by the Association for Past Life Research and Therapies, and has actually done considerable research into the area of past lives. And in 1991, she began working with ET experiencers, and since then has conducted regressions with more than 560 of them. That's right, 560 people at least, and totaling about 1,800 actual regressions to these types of encounters. She also teaches workshops for regression therapists. She's very accomplished in this field. She is currently the president of the Academy of Clinical Close Encounter Therapists and is a board member of the Journal of Abduction Encounter Research. She has presented numerous lectures on this subject across the United States and the world, Canada, England, Belgium, I mean, you name it. And she has appeared on so many television shows, Encounters, The Other Side, The Learning Channel, The History Channel, you name it, The Discovery Channel. She has been on it because her knowledge is in great demand. There are just a small handful of people doing what she's doing. She's also a noted crop circle researcher and has written a book on that as well called Crop Circles Revealed, which she wrote with Judith K. Moore in 2001. But tonight we're going to be talking mostly about her book, Alien Experiences, 25 Cases of Close Encounter Never Before Revealed, which has just been released by Trafford Publishing. And it's an amazing book. Barbara, thank you so much for coming on to the show.
Oh, you're so welcome. I'm delighted. I want to say, Preston, that you're one of my favorite researchers and one of my favorite people in the world. And I truly mean that.
Oh, thank you, Barbara. Yeah, we've been doing this together for quite some time. It's been very interesting watching each other kind of evolve in this field.
Yes, and I think we've been cheering each other on every time we speak about researching for another book. We just give each other great encouragement, and there really are not too awfully many people, I think, in the world who are doing work that's focused on this subject. So, you know, I think what we do is unique, and it's definitely appreciated by a lot of people.
Right. You know, it's bizarre that there are so few people doing this when you consider how common contact really is.
It is. Far more, I think, than the general public realizes. It's
right.
Amazing. And, I mean, even back in the early 1990s, the Roper poll estimated that there must be at least 5 million Americans who were having extraterrestrial encounters. And since then, I've heard even larger figures, like maybe, I don't know in terms of millions, but, well, maybe about 8 million. That's the last figure I heard. And that's just in America. And, of course, Preston, you and I know that this is really a worldwide phenomenon.
Right.
So who knows, you know, how many millions are actually involved in this?
Well, I'm right there with you. I think it's a lot of people. You know, I was skeptical growing up and heard a report that there was 1 in 40 people have been taken on board a UFO. That's actually J. Allen Hynek, the father of modern...
Yeah, he was quoted saying that.
Mm. And I'm like, wow, that's a lot. I think I know 40 people. I'm going to ask everyone I know
yeah.
and see if I can find, you know, anyone who's been taken on board. And that's when I got a real shock. I found 5 abductees or experiencers who, you know, just within my circle of friends and family and coworkers.
Oh, yes, it is amazing. I mean, you could have somebody right there in your family, even in your immediate family, who's been having these experiences, but for various reasons, they might not really feel free to talk about it, or they might be afraid that people will think badly of them or think that they've gone crazy or they're using their imaginations. But really, we find with the regression work, which I think is a very, very good way to find out more about this, we find that these people are not making up these experiences. They, in regression, they're really having the conviction that they are going back in time and reliving the experience moment by moment by moment. And they're always surprised with what comes up from the subconscious mind. But, of course, people come to me for regression work when they at least highly suspect that some kind of encounter with unusual beings has been going on, or they wouldn't even seek me out and bother to come and have a regression. So they have little clues, and very often people will just remember, maybe at the most a minute or so of the experience. And sometimes they remember just the first few seconds or maybe up to a minute when an experience is about to begin, or other times, other people remember just the last few seconds of an experience before they sort of come to or wake up. And so all the rest of the experience, which usually lasts about an hour and a half or 2 hours, but most of that material is just sort of lost in the subconscious mind. But the really thrilling thing is, and I'm very grateful for it, is that our subconscious minds record absolutely everything that we've ever done and anything that's ever happened to us, even when we're sort of blocked out of consciousness and are not consciously aware of what's going on. But the subconscious mind records it, and that's why we can have these hypnotic regressions, and we can find out exactly what happened in the experience somebody is regressing to.
Right.
So it's an amazing thing. And as I said before, people are often very surprised because maybe they had thought before having a regression that, oh, I'm going to be so terrified, I'm going to be tortured, I'm going to just feel awful. And then when they actually get into the experience in regression, sometimes they find things that they're not pleased that are happening to them, but other times they find some really positive things that are happening during the encounter. And sometimes they even end up feeling very privileged, honored, that they, for whatever reason, seem to have been chosen to be interacted with by these unusual beings that certainly seem to come from elsewhere.
That's what I actually really loved about your book, one of the many things I really liked about it, because you know, there's a lot of media out there which focuses on the fear of UFOs and the fear of abductions and these examinations by emotionless gray-type ETs. I think that's how a lot of people view abductions.
Yes.
But reading your book, you know, it enlightened even me, who's been doing this for years, at how many people are having what seem to be largely benevolent encounters, even if they are scary.
Well, yeah, I think the thought of it is, in some cases, the scariest thing, because people think, oh my gosh, strange-looking beings came to me very often. You know, when I'm sleeping at night, they come into
right.
my room and they're just suddenly there, and I feel like I'm lifted up out of the bed and taken right out through a wall or through a ceiling. How can that be? And it's just got to be an awful, horrible thing. I mean, that's what the thought easily can be. And I really do think that that's sort of the idea that the media has tended to promote when they do programs on this subject. But definitely not all of the encounter experiences are really frightening once somebody realizes what they are. And they sort of lose that shock of the impact of seeing beings that are just so different than we are, and yet they're upright. You know, in some ways, they remind people of humans, and some of them even look a little bit more like humans than others do. Some of them look very different than we are. Some of them might even look a little bit frightening to us, but it doesn't mean that they necessarily are doing frightening things. For instance, a type that I'd like to mention is that many people have encounters with very, very tall beings who are pure white, very tall, very thin, might be 7.5 feet tall or 8 feet or even taller. That's pretty tall from our human point of view.
Right.
The most unusual thing about them is their eyes. They have huge eyes, much larger even than the little gray beings that are always reported to have big black eyes, but these are more like huge insect-like eyes that even kind of curve around the side of the head. And these beings we tend to call insectoid types of beings. And they have very, very long, thin arms like a praying mantis would or a grasshopper. And these arms sort of bend in the way that a praying mantis insect would. But these insectoid beings usually have some kind of clothing on, and sometimes they seem to be green in color, the clothing and the skin, and sometimes they seem to be really pure white. So it sounds like these beings would be kind of disturbing, these great big huge insects, but at least to me, that sounds like, yeah, I'd be very comfortable with those. But the amazing thing is that person after person after person whom I regress to experiences with these insect-like beings, they consistently report that these insectoid beings are very benign, very benevolent, and some of them even have said they are unconditionally loving. So they don't look like they would be, unconditionally loving and really wonderful to be with, but they actually are. And that's come from the regressions for so many people that have had contact with them that I think that, you know, generally speaking, that must be pretty true of the insectoid beings.
Wow,
oh, and while I'm thinking of it, Preston, you mentioned some figures there in your wonderful introduction, and I actually, by now, have regressed at least 620 different individuals to these extraterrestrial encounter experiences, and the number of regressions is, oh, it's considerably now over 1,800 regressions that I've done for this purpose. And you know
what?
They keep coming. And yesterday I had a woman from Arizona who had driven all the way over here to have a regression. And in fact, we realized in that regression that the experience that she went to in the regression showed her that she had had experiences before that as well with the same kinds of beings, and that she didn't just have one experience with the ETs in her life, but she probably had been having quite a number of experiences that she didn't consciously remember until we had that regression yesterday. And
wow.
This is typical, too, that, you know, I have people calling, and you know, quite frequently, and sometimes they'll say, well, I know I had an, in other words, one experience of abduction or extraterrestrial encounter, and that's all that they consciously know about. But it is pretty typical that once we get into the regression on that one experience that they're aware that they had, that they then get very triggered in their memory and they realize, oh, yeah, I've been with these beings before, or I remember this craft, or, oh, I remember other times when that bright light came in through the window and came to me in my bed, and then there were three beings standing there whom I didn't recognize. I didn't even know what they were, but they certainly were living beings, and they'll remember many instances, or at least parts of various instances that they had previously had with these unusual beings.
Well, why are the ETs imposing an amnesia? I think the evidence is pretty strong that it's them doing it, not our own mind. But why would they be doing it?
You know, you're raising a very interesting point because there are two things at work. One is that, you know, we have just built into our psyches, we have the ability to repress certain information and certain things that happen to us that are difficult for us to integrate, difficult for us to really face. So if an unusual experience like this happens with strange beings coming and taking you away for a while, you know, that can feel very distressing and very frightening. So a person has their own mechanism for just sort of blocking out and repressing that information. So I think that's part of it. But then
like child abuse,
part,
right?
Pardon?
Like child abuse victims or war victims.
That's right. And then usually in that case, sooner or later, in fact, maybe even many times, there'll be little bleed-throughs, little flashes of memory that will make the person wonder, or they'll be showing signs of certain symptoms, and somebody else says, you know, it sounds like you might have been abducted by aliens. And then a person might start giving themselves permission to remember. But the other part of it, which you were suggesting too, is that these beings do seem to have a way, I don't know how they do it, but to make the person kind of go out of awareness. It's not exactly like they're unconscious, but they're just not consciously aware of what's going on in the main body of the abduction, the main part
right.
of it.
Like a trance state.
Yeah, and I think there are probably a good reason for that. One of them is that these other beings who come here seem to know that people can really panic. They can panic, they can go into fear, and they can be pretty unruly when panicked and fearful. So in other words, we could scream, yell, fight, kick, thrash about. And I've known a couple of people who've actually done that at the beginning of an extraterrestrial encounter and really injured the alien beings. And
right.
They didn't mean to necessarily injure them, but they, they weren't deliberately attacking them, but they were just so frightened and they just flailed their arms and kicked and the visiting beings just had to leave because one or maybe more of them were actually being physically injured. So they know that. In fact, one little story I'd love to tell, and I certainly believe this is a true story, is that one woman whom I worked with, I would say for probably 20 different regressions at least, mostly in the 1990s, we did this work, and she got to the point where she thought she would really like to be able to stay conscious, alert, aware during whatever would be the next forthcoming extraterrestrial encounter experience. So she was sort of training herself and imagining, okay, the next time they come, I'm going to remain calm, I'm going to keep my eyes open, I'm going to ask them to let me be conscious. And sure enough, after doing that for a few weeks, you know, sort of inviting them in her mind, and then the next time they came, they started levitating her up from her bed where they visited her, and she felt the bed covers slipping away, and there she was, about maybe 4 feet up over the bed, and there were these three beings. And a couple of those beings she definitely recognized. One was the tall insectoid being that she had come to really like and even love very much. And so she didn't think that she would be frightened, but once she realized she was about 4 feet over the bed, floating there and being lifted or floated up to the ceiling and that she was going to be taken through the ceiling and that she was conscious through this, she panicked, and she started flailing and thrashing around. And so the three beings immediately, and this was still up in the air above her bed, they
right.
started wrapping a big netting around her, sort of bound her up like a cocoon. And so she couldn't move her arms and legs, and she remained conscious as they continued to float her up through the rest of the bedroom, up to the ceiling, through the roof, out into the air, through a beam of light and onto a craft. And then when they arrived inside the craft, the three beings and this woman, they stood her up right on her feet and they sort of unwound the netting that had been binding her and said, "We're very sorry we had to do that binding, but we just knew from other people's experiences that you might panic, you might thrash around, and we didn't want you to injure yourself, and we didn't want you to injure us." So then she was all right with the netting taken off, and turned out that it was a very wonderful, enlightening experience on that craft that particular time. So there was certainly no need to flail and thrash around. And
right.
But there's another woman I work with many, many times, probably 40 or 45 regressions.
Wow.
And this also was in the 1990s and maybe early 2000s. And she had really wanted a conscious, awake, aware extraterrestrial encounter experience. And so she was asking in her mind telepathically, for several weeks she just kept thinking of them and picturing them and sort of pretending she was talking with them and saying, "Next time you come, I want you to let me to be very awake and conscious and alert and aware of the whole experience." So So having done that for a while, one night she was sitting watching television in her family room. This was in Southern California. And behind the television set was a big plate glass window. And she noticed there was a little motion outside the window. This was at nighttime. And she looked more closely. She got up and she went to the window. And she saw, to her delight, that here outside were what she always called her three little white guys. These were little E.T. beings, looking very similar to the little gray beings, except that these were pure white, and instead of the big black almond-shaped eyes, they had sort of round eyes and a little bit of irises, or big irises, but a little bit of white in them, and their eyes always seemed expressive. And these little white guys were the ones that had taken her on experience after experience after experience ever since she was a very young child. And she really liked these little beings. In fact, she really had a lot of affection for them. So this particular night when she saw them outside the window and they were looking at her, and they didn't smile because they don't have the facial musculature to smile, but they looked very benign and nice. And so she went out the door there and joined them, and they took her aboard a very small craft, small enough to fit into her backyard, although it was a pretty big backyard. Took her up some steps into the craft, and they ushered her into a chair, which she said reminded her of a barber chair, or and sort of an upright dental chair. And they sat in similar chairs. So it was the three little white guys and then herself. And they let her be conscious and awake. And they said, "We felt that you were ready for this." And they began to show her like sort of screens of star maps, because she had always wondered where they came from in the cosmos, and they were trying to teach her about where they came from and where she was on Earth in relation to where they come from. But the only problem was that she was so excited and happy that she was awake and conscious that she could hardly pay attention to what they were saying. And she was so eager to stay conscious and aware that she kept slapping her thigh and pinching her skin, even pinching her cheeks, you know, so that she would know that, yes, okay, I'm really awake, I'm really here, I'm really conscious, and this is really happening. And because they could tell that she wasn't really paying great attention to what they were trying to teach her, at one point they telepathically said to her, "Okay, well, you're doing very, very well and staying awake and conscious, and we're pleased because we knew you wanted to do that, but you're not really paying attention, so I think we're just going to take you back now," which they did. But it's so cute. And another lady who I did many regressions with, she also really wanted to have a conscious, awake experience with the beings that came from for her each time she had an abduction. And she kept saying in her mind, "Okay, you guys, come when I'm conscious and awake in the light of day. Don't keep sneaking up on me in the dark of night and catching me by surprise."
Well, Barbara, can I interrupt you for a second? We actually have a caller who would like to ask a question.
Okay.
If you don't,
sure.
Caller, are you there?
I'm here, Preston.
How you doing? What's your name?
I'm doing. This is Stan from Spokane.
Oh. And how you doing, Stan?
Doing great. I've got a question. I'm really enjoying your program. And I wonder if when she does a regression with people, do they talk about aromas or tastes as well as feelings and sights?
Oh, that's a good question. I like that. I'd be happy to address
I'm
that.
I'm going to hang up and listen to it.
Okay.
So you heard the question?
Yeah, I think the question is, do people in their regressions to extraterrestrial experiences, do they ever talk about aromas, scents, and tastes? So I would like to address that. Yes, I've had a number of people who have definitely commented, even if they're not doing a regression, but they're just simply having an experience, they comment later about the strong aroma, the strong scent that some of the visiting extraterrestrials have. And one lady was so intrigued with this smell that she wanted to duplicate it here on Earth. And partly so she could, you know, give herself validation about the experiences. Yes, indeed, they really happened. And also to show other people in her family and show me and other people who are interested. So she started concocting things just from household fluids. And she tried many experiments with this. And finally, she was able to recreate a scent, S-C-E-N-T, aroma that came very, very close to the scent from the extraterrestrial beings. And how she achieved that was mixing rotting peaches and furniture polish.
Oh, wow.
So she kind of mushed them all up together, and they, you know, created the same kind of scent, or very, very close to it, that she had smelled on a number of occasions from extraterrestrials. Other people have reported on that, too. Some people call it sort of a sulfur-like aroma from extraterrestrials.
Right.
And other people have described it as more of a sort of a pungent, sour kind of scent. Those are the ones that are coming to mind now. And then, to answer the second part of the question about tastes, some people have found in the regressions that they're on board a craft and that they're given something to drink. And I've had two or three people who were kind of under the weather when that abduction happened. In other words, they had a cold or a flu or something that was kind of, you know, dragging them down with a bit of sickness. And that in each case, these are people who don't even know each other, but in each case, they were given a fluid, like a container, glass-like container of kind of a green, dark green, viscous sort of liquid, and were asked to drink that, and that that would really help them with whatever that infirmity was that they had. So that's been coming through some of these regressions. And also, one boy whom I knew ever since he was about 3 years old, and even at age three, he was able to, in detail, remember and describe his extraterrestrial abductions. He didn't call them abductions, though, because to him they were wonderful. He was always so happy and excited when his space friends would come. He called them space friends or his space family and take him on the spaceship. And one time he came back and told his mother the next morning. He was probably about age 4 or 5 at that time. And he not only had been given the glass of green, sort of mulchy, kind of that thick fluid to help him one time when he had a cold, but another time, I guess he was really feeling even more poorly and had stayed home from school, and they put him in something that sounded like a bathtub, some sort of horizontal container. And it had this dark green viscous fluid in it, too. And they just asked him to soak in that like we would soak in a bathtub of nice warm water. And that helped him to feel really good, too. And you know what? This is not part of the caller's question, but the same little boy one day brought with him from an encounter a funny little piece of food, and his mother found it on the sofa in their family room, and she knew that he had had an experience the night before because he told her in the morning, you know, after he woke up, and mm-hmm. she was really trusting by that time that he was having those extraterrestrial experiences. So she was just sort of straightening up things in the family room that afternoon, and she came across this little mysterious-looking piece of food. She described it as looking like a hairy raisin. And she said, ew, and picked it up between her two fingers. And her little son said, oh, yeah, that's what I had to eat last night on the spaceship. And she, wow. though, was freaked out by this little thing. And she immediately grabbed it, and she took it into the kitchen, threw it into the garbage disposal, and ground it up. And, yeah, and the little boy was following her and saying, no, Mommy, no, that's great. That's wonderful food. It helped me. But he couldn't stop her because she just felt so uneasy about this hairy raisin. And then immediately after she ground it up in the garbage disposal, she said, oh, no, look what I've done. This could be the most important piece of evidence that's ever been found in the world, and I just got rid of it.
Wow.
And that reminds me, too, that, you know, there may be more evidence from these abductions than we realize, but people do tend to just get rid of it right away. And that even happened to me a very few years ago when I had an abduction experience myself driving down the 101 freeway in Southern California. And my car and I were taken. And
wow.
at the end of the experience, a laser beam was shot right across my windshield. I was back in the car driving it at that point. And it went right across my windshield, and it cracked the whole windshield in front of my driving wheel. And it also took the paint off the little border of the car right around the windshield and on one side. And so there it was. I mean, there was no overlooking that crack in the windshield. It was like a spider web shape of a crack. You know, many, many different cracks involved in that pattern. And I had to have the windshield replaced. And when the man came to replace the windshield, we noticed that the paint of the car had been taken down right there, all the way down to the metal. And did
wow.
I take pictures of it? No.
Barbara.
I know. And I've been doing years of regression work with experiencers of extraterrestrial contact by that time, so I knew better consciously. But I wonder, maybe we'll never know, but I wonder if the beings who do these interactions with us might in some way telepathically influence us to get rid of evidence.
Right. Or maybe they're
influencing
post-traumatic suggestions or something.
I knew better, and so did the mother of the child who had the hairy raisin from his experience. But we just instinctively blanked out about trying to save that evidence.
Right.
It's
well, everyone,
really
you're
crazy.
Listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and our guest tonight is Barbara Lamb. We're talking about her new book, Alien Experiences, 25 Cases of Close Encounters Revealed. And you can actually visit her website, which is www.alienexperiences.com, if you want to learn more about this and contact her. Is that right? People can contact you through your website?
They certainly can, and they can also order the book through that website. It's $19.95, and we gladly send that out very promptly. And you can pay for it on the website in a couple of different ways, including through PayPal. So we've made it very, very easy for you. And you can take a look and see what you think. And also my Crop Circle book, Crop Circles Revealed, can be ordered on the very same website, too, that www.alienexperiences.com. You know, it might be interesting, Preston. I know we don't have a lot of time left, but I would mention some of the different types of ETs, extraterrestrials that there are that have come through my regression work. Because
right, that's another thing I wanted to ask you. I mean, because there's so many different types. Have you ever had people been abducted by the same ET or same group of ETs?
Well, I think by the same type of ETs. Yes, in fact, I have a monthly experiencer support group, and we meet at my home or sometimes somebody else's home here in Claremont, Southern California. And everyone in the group has definitely had experiences with the ETs, and they've had regressions with me. And so we compare notes a lot, but also I gathered this information from the regressions. And there was a man and a woman in the group, and they were in it for several years, and they definitely had experiences you know, with some of the same beings. I mean, we think the very same beings.
Wow.
Not just even the same type. But I think that usually people, you know, can meet with certain types, like I mentioned, the insectoids, and maybe a few thousand or millions of other people will meet with insectoids. But whether they're the very same individual beings, it's hard to say. But anyway, let's quickly run through those, if that's okay with you.
Yes, please.
The ones we hear about the most and that seem to be depicted in the media are the short, gray beings, very spindly, thin bodies, big heads, especially large at the top, big black eyes, just little holes for noses and little slit for mouth, no ears, no hair. Some of them seem more robot-like, some seem more naturalistic in their moving. And then there were taller gray beings who might be about 5'7" tall or 5'8", and some of those have been described as having unusual eyes, like one man described them as beveled, you know, as in a beveled glass with different angles,
right,
sort of different facets to the eyes.
Wow.
And then there are the small white beings, very sweet, sensitive, expressive, that I mentioned before. And there are some medium-sized bronze-colored beings, kind of look like the grays, but they're much taller than them and a different color. And there are silvery-blue beings who seem very curious, very gentle, sweet even. Those I met with on that highway abduction, 101 freeway. And of course, we probably mostly heard about the human-looking beings, whom we call Nordics because they tend to look like tall, really good-looking Scandinavian type of beings. And then we have a whole group of reptilian types of beings, and there are several different types described for reptilian types. And even aquatic beings. And
right,
some of the reptilians are very, very interested in reproductive procedures. Some are very interested in sexual procedures and like to engage in that with humans. A reptilian male with a human female, and even a reptilian female with a human male. But they do other things too. They do educating and so forth. And then the insectoid types, which I mentioned. And then some really small, shorter, bug-eyed types. They might be about 4 feet tall. They don't seem to be very responsive or very friendly. And then we get into other types, like ethereal types that seem almost angelic. In some cases, they're almost see-through, almost transparent. And yet they're very real, present beings, and they tend to be very enlightened and do some rather spiritual enlightening experiences with the human beings they interact with.
Do you have reports of any beings covered with fur or hair on their entire body?
Yes, very, very rarely. I've had reports of short beings that are covered with a fairly thick fur. And then, of course, there are the beings that we call Bigfoot or Sasquatch beings, and many people think that they may be extraterrestrials living here partly and partly on a craft, and we're not, I don't know if anyone's absolutely positive that they come from somewhere else, because they do seem to be adapted to living here on the earth, especially in forests and mountains and so forth. There are some really beautiful beings who look a little bit more like human than any other type, and they're very glowing and radiant. They just radiate a beautiful white light or a blue light. Or a couple of clients have seen beings that are sort of round-shaped, sort of spherically shaped, with more density in the middle, but this beautiful blue energy radiating out in a spherical form around this sort of density in the middle. And they float along, and they get nourished by going into a building which tends in a couple of cases to look rather like a temple with columns, and that's sort of an energy regenerating source. And so when all this beautiful glow forming the spherical shape seems to retract and pull back more toward the center of their being, then they float their way into this sort of energy regeneration temple-like structure, and then the glow just spreads right out again. They're re-nourished and re-energized. And you know, there's a kind of being, too, that I know this may sound preposterous, but a couple of my clients, and they don't know each other, found in their regressions that in each case the man was taken way out into space, didn't seem to be taken in any kind of craft or enclosure, but definitely sort of like guided out there or pulled by the hand out into the air, probably out into the atmosphere or even above the atmosphere. And then out there, they saw in the distance a great big form. It looked like a huge amoeba-like form, or even described rather like a jellyfish, sort of semi-transparent, but with beautiful colors of blue and purple and pink. And but you could kind of look into this amoeba-like thing. And these would be huge. I mean, maybe 100 feet in diameter or so.
Wow.
Just floating in the air. And it would be a little bit startling for the experiencer. But then when he was drawn into this being, kind of absorbed into it, even though a bit frightened, going closer, uh-oh, what's going to happen? My goodness. But once inside this being, who seemed to be sort of undulating and floating there, they found that they suddenly knew everything about everything. They were clairsentient, knew everything that they ever wanted to know and everything even beyond what they'd ever wanted to know. And they felt a total feeling of being unconditionally loved. So
wow.
One of the men I regressed to that was here in Southern California. Another one, interestingly, was a resident of Roswell, New Mexico, and I regressed him when I was in New Mexico. And those two men had a very similar experience, and in each case they were so sad when they came back because they had to leave this wonderfully loving being. So
right,
that's interesting.
Imagine.
Also, another type that's really nice in the range of extraterrestrials is what some people have called the green onion people, or the spring onion people, or the stick plant people. And these beings, I had one encounter with them too last January, and it was wonderful. They're very tall, probably 8 or 9 feet tall, maybe 10 feet, extremely narrow, extremely thin, nearly transparent, and they, so their heads are kind of shaped like the bulb of a green onion. I guess that's why we tend to call them that. They have a a darker area indicating the eyes, but no other distinct features, and they appear in clusters together, maybe 10 or 12 or 15 beings together. They stand right next to each other, side by side, but kind of undulating a little bit in front of the next one and then a little bit in the back of the next one. And they just exude a wonderful feeling. They exude love, and they seem to, even without distinct features, they tend to sort of indicate very pleasant expressions. And they can communicate telepathically. They seem bathed in light, and they seem to be sort of sending out a wonderful light. I mean, they're really very fine beings. And there are some other beings that we could call extraterrestrial that are very angelic looking, full of light, with much more human looking faces, glowing with light, ethereal, not very solid looking, but they are very often here to comfort people and maybe protect them and inspire them. And then there are some beings, like there's a 10-foot tall female being described by one of my clients, and she had a head shaped like a bell pepper, you know, with a dent in the top of the skull.
Right. I've heard this, actually. I have heard this.
Yes, you know that person whom I did the regression with. In fact, I think you might have introduced me to her years ago. And this being is very kindly, and she takes care of abducted human children and abducted human babies, and takes care of the hybrid babies. That's a whole other subject I'm sure we don't have time to get into.
Right.
And they wear clothing like robes, long robes, but they're a very kindly, nurturing type. And we have putty-colored beings, and we have
Zeta
beings
that
are maybe 5'8" and gray-like, but they're very good teachers and train human beings in doing healing techniques. And then we have what some people describe as the ant, A-N-T, beings, ant people, kind of like the insectoids, but a bit smaller, and they do a whole variety of things. And then, gosh, we have these tall white beings that, not the insectoid, but they're white with kind of a different sort of face. They give a lot of information. We also have beings who seem to travel in balls of light, like orbs or spheres of light. And sometimes they, when they land at a place, like if they hit a physical piece of furniture or a wall or the ground, it's like they sort of explode with light, and then out come extraterrestrial beings from that orb of light. And then when it's time for them to leave the person, go back to wherever they came from, I don't know where that is, it seems as if they're calling upon the orb to come, and suddenly it's there. They get into the orb, and away they go. I mean, it's really quite different. And some of the aquatic beings seem to breathe through membranes, almost like gills that seem to open and close. So presumably they can only stay in the air on Earth for a shorter time, maybe just a very few hours, or they might get sick, and they probably do much better in watery environments.
Right. Well, you know what, Barbara? We're pretty much out of time. Gosh. Been so many.
Okay.
I have so many more questions I wanted to ask you. You're going to have to come on the show again, would you? Would you consider that?
I would be happy to, yes. I'd love to share about this, and I so much appreciate your work, Preston. I'd be happy to.
Awesome, because I want to talk about, you know, like 2012 and all of these prophecies people are being given about our future. Don't have time. And that, that's just so interesting to me, because it's so, so consistent and just comes up again and again.
Yes, it does.
But we're out of time. Barbara, I want to thank you so much for coming onto the show. It's been amazing.
Oh, well, it's a great pleasure for me, and thank you, too.
Well, we'll definitely have to have you on again, because we have so much more to talk about.
We do, yes.
All right, well, everyone, that's our show for tonight. I want to thank you all for listening. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and our guest tonight has been Barbara Lamb, who has written an amazing book. You have to go out and get it right away. It's one of the best books out there on this subject. It's called Alien Experiences, 25 Cases of Close Encounter Never Before Revealed. And if you would like, you can actually get it from her website, from Barbara Lamb's website, which is www.alienexperiences.com. That's all one word, alienexperiences.com. The book is chock full of information. It's got illustrations. It's really quite an amazing accomplishment. And we are so lucky to have Barbara in the world with us.
Oh, thank you.
All right, everyone.
Glad to be here.
Thank you all for listening. I hope you can join us next week when I bring on another exciting guest. Until then, have a wonderful evening and a great week. Bye now.